from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 31st day of January 2018. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vank. She's at Stewart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll preview tomorrow's Organic Grains Conference and Trade Show that's taking place right here in Champaign, Illinois, at the Hilton Inn. It opens up at 9 a.m. and you can walk in there, I believe, and the cost will be about $45. She'll give you some really good reasons that you'll want to show up, even if you're not an organic farmer. And maybe if you're just interested in such things as farming organically, you can do that tomorrow right here in Champaign County. Michelle Wander from the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences will join us to give us a look at her discussion right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by Jackie Vank. She's from Stewart Peterson to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Let's start where we have the past several weeks with kind of resistance and support levels, because we keep bumping up against things.
We do. And I think one of the things I want to say before I even go into that is that, you know, when it comes to beans, South America, you know, just continues to lag on their harvest. So, you know, you really need to take advantage of this window we have right now, you know, to look for better basis along with the bounces we've had. When you look at March corn, resistance 362.5. We haven't been above that since November 9th of 17, and that's near-term resistance. If you look at support, 357, but major support 345.5. And so, you know, those numbers don't sound terrible, but we don't want to go back there. Let's just put it that way. March beans, we got resistance at 10.04¾, which was yesterday's high. We needed a second close over that 9.95½. That's a 62% retracement of the move down from 10.27 to 9.44½. So we've got support down there at the 200-day moving average, which is 9.80. Now, we do have to take some things into account for today's action, and that's primarily, you know, this is the end of the month. And so, you know, you always have some unusual things happening at the end of the month, and we'll find out tomorrow what the true sentiment of the market is.
What about the U.S. dollar at this point?
Well, that's, you know, that's been a big driver in the rally that we've had, of course. And in January, you know, of 2017, we hit a high of 103.8. Today, we dropped to 88.43, and that 200, now, mind you, the 200-month moving average is 88.28. So we got mighty close. The last time we were ever in this area was December of 14, but 200 months, that's a long time, you know, and so it's helping us. There's no question about it. Definitely hurting the Brazilian farmers. So the Brazilian farmers really not making a lot of sales, just primarily because their currency has been getting stronger. Our currency has been getting weaker. And they get paid in American dollars. So that's another reason I believe that we continue to see some of the rallies that we've had.
Do you think the factors impacting the soybean market might be at this point? Or maybe you can just kind of give us a list of the positives and the negatives.
Well, and I'm happy to do that, Todd, because there's just so many factors involved. You know, if you look from a positive standpoint, that U.S. dollar drop, it, you know, it improves the competitive edge on South America. And like I said, it slows down South American farmer selling. The positive would be the South America harvest has just started. They're 10 to 15 days behind, and they continue to have weather issues. You know, we've got good exports, although we remain not just behind last year. We're behind the five-year average, and that hasn't changed any. You know, I think the other thing that was really positive in this current rally is that it actually brought some beans to market in the U.S., and, you know, the more that we can get out of farmers' hands, the closer we get to the point where the commercial is now the majority holder and he wants to see the market go higher rather than lower. February is insurance month for corn and beans. Always kind of interesting how that seems to play into the marketplace. Another positive, cotton might take some acres from beans. You know, in the past, it's never exceeded 1 million acres. In fact, the majority throughout my history, it's been about 800,000 is the max that we've seen. But projections are for 1 million more bean acres. So, you know, if cotton would take away 1 million, that just puts us back at last year's acreage. They still continue to have that long-term dry forecast in Argentina. And, you know, heavy rains in parts of Brazil, we talked about this a little bit last week, and I'll talk about it a little more, has caused some of the pods to abort. But this is a small area, but definitely has boosted the market. Now, what would be the negatives? What could hold the market back? You know, none of these bean future contracts have been able to find buying above that 62% retracement I was just talking about. If the U.S. dollar would rally, that certainly wouldn't help us. Elevators will have ample supplies as we near spring and real estate tax payment time, unfortunately. As soon as South America starts to harvest in earnest, I think selling the board is going to happen as elevators take in crop and do exactly what we should be doing when we sell. They protect themselves from having paid too much. We should be protecting ourselves from having received too little. But South America is harvesting another large crop. It just keeps getting harder or larger. You know, you look at Brazil, they might even have a crop as large as their record crop last year. Another negative, South America and the U.S. farmers still have crop to sell, which you would expect it to be, but it's a little more than it should be. Argentine weather can drive the market higher. It gives you opportunity. But in the long run, you have to recognize they have little influence on the market compared to Brazil. And of course, a negative, February is insurance month for corn and beans. So it's on both the positive and the negative side at times. Managed money is not as short as you would think, about 83,000. Not nearly enough to cause what I would call a big rally. And, you know, for now, and until we get further into this and closer to prospective plantings, it appears we're going to have more beans planted in the U.S. this spring. And, you know, and that's why the February insurance month is either negative or positive, because, you know, if we end up with a very good number for beans, that could drive more bean acres versus corn or vice versa. You know, so it definitely has an impact one way or the other.
Hey, we've heard often from our meteorologists that there is rainfall in Brazil. What do we know about the impact of it on the growing crop at this time?
Well, yeah, you know, if only could take Brazil and Argentina and put them in a bag and shake them up, it would really be good, you know, because Argentina needs rain, where Brazil has been getting excess rain in some areas. Now, I have to qualify that. This is some areas. This isn't everywhere. There's been the areas that have just been getting excellent amount of rain, the right amount. But, you know, in parts of Paraná, like I mentioned earlier, you know, those healthy pods have been falling to the ground. And, you know, they first speculated that this was due to soil saturation, because in some areas they had gotten as much as 8 inches of rain. And now they've actually gone through and they actually feel that the main part of it is a lack of sunshine. You know, we always talk about how important sunshine is to beans, right? But boy, you sure don't think about it, that it could cause it to abort healthy pods. Now, Paraná, just to put this in perspective, Paraná has had nearly daily rains for the last 35 days. Now, we know when it rains, it's quality, right? So this would kind of explain the lack of sunshine. So that area, and mind you, I don't want people jumping up and down, because this is not a huge area. They figure it's going to lose probably about 26% of its yield. And but they don't, you know, they don't really have an idea how it's going to impact the whole state. Mato Grosso looks to be wetter the next 1 to 3 weeks, and that's slowing down the bean harvest and the safrinha corn planting. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on down there.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. And that, of course, is Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Tomorrow, if you're in the Champaign area and you're interested in organic grains, you might want to stop by the Hilton Inn all day long. And this one's open. There is a registration fee. I think it's probably $45 for the event. But at the Hilton Inn, the Organic Grain Conference and Trade Show will take place.
Michelle Wander will be one of the presenters, and she's here to talk to us a little bit about what her discussion points for tomorrow might be for that conference. Tell me why it is that you'll be there and what you'll be taking up tomorrow.
I'll be talking about what I call the Holy Trinity, spelled with a H-O-L-E for the hole in the ground, talking about the basic soil management practices that they can use for soil stewardship on their farm. And that really, you know, with organic, where they're really working to substitute knowledge and know-how and their tools for inputs, they really have to do a good job. And so really focusing on how to bring information that we have to their actual farm fields.
How long have you been at this, and what have you learned? What's the primary item that you'll tell them about tomorrow?
Well, I think that I've been at this for a long time, over 20 years, and it's been a really great pleasure to work with organic growers because most of them are very committed, smart people, and they're always trying to do better and better. And so I've learned a lot from working with many of our long-term organic farmers in Illinois. And I think the thing is there's no substitute for a good rotation. And really they, you know, have the challenges of balancing their tools, which, you know, they have tillage, they have inputs with fertilizers, and then they have really the crop component. And they have to do a really good job with those three, and they're making trade-offs. You know, the overuse of tillage causes harm to the soil, and we've been measuring soil characteristics, actually really been able to work on lots of farms over a 20-year period and able to really compare them to adjacent grounds and see that they're doing a good job by maintaining soil organic matter. But not all organic systems are identical, and not all soils are equally resilient. So you can see people who are farming more difficult ground having to work harder to keep their soils in good shape. You know, so the soil is a good basically check on stewardship. And so we've been tracking soil characteristics and can tell them, and you can see if you're not putting enough into the soil, it'll tell on you.
Well, so tell me some of the things, and maybe, I don't know, food grade corn and soybeans or whatever rotation you want to talk about that works really well. Some of the things that producers ought to be doing.
Yeah, so we have a real interest in high-quality food-grade grains here and really a lot of success stories. And since we don't have a ton of folks with integrated animals, we focus more on helping those guys because they have a harder job. If people are raising animals and have integrated livestock, they have longer rotations and they have that forage and hay component. And all the long-term studies we have, including our not-so-great version of it in the Marplots, show you that that long rotation that includes that hay component is really good for the soil. So for the people who are trying to do intensive grain production, and I think the focus tomorrow is on grains that probably a lot of folks are not feeding to animals, but you have different issues. If you're growing a different grain for feed and your grain quality characteristics are going to differ. And we have a lot of sophisticated farmers here who are really interested in that grain quality for high quality foodstuffs. And so we're have some interesting work with those folks and really what they're balancing the need to grow their fertility because they don't have animals or import it, which is very expensive to bring in. And just like conventional farmers, a lot of people who don't have animals are either being really clever at sourcing materials around them if they have some compost sorts or bringing in higher density like chicken litter is being commonly used. And that is like conventional fertilizers is a really high intensity nitrogen rich material that has to be managed responsibly or you're going to lose a lot of it. And so I think that a lot of farmers who are growing organically are paying a lot, so they need to keep it just like conventional farmers to keep it in the ground for the crop and not have it go off either being volatilized or leached. So they have to think of the same ways. And I think we have some of the work that my group is doing, we're really interested in helping farmers get better decision support, just like in the conventional world, so they can actually understand risk and, you know, sort of the where we're getting into trouble with more intense rainfall and sort of these points of risk and similarly for erosion. So getting people to think really strategically about timing of management. So we have the four R's are right there in organic. While organic is always and it's in its principles to try to achieve good stewardship, they can benefit quite a bit from having decision support that makes it really obvious to them.
So if you're applying anhydrous ammonia, you think about it and you say, well, I want to make sure that the soil temperature is below 50 degrees. I don't want it to be too dry or too wet. I need that knife track to close up and make sure that it holds the nitrogen in place so that it's there and available for the crop. If you're applying litter, I'm assuming this is over the top, what kinds of things do they have to do to make sure it doesn't move around? Is it about watching timing and weather and rain events that might immediately come afterwards? What sorts of things?
Yeah, that's right. And we're in this position now. We have really, if you're going to put on chicken litter, it's got very similar issues. And if you would incorporate it and put it on a cover crop, then you've got an active sink where the cover could take it up and grow and immobilize it. And the same thing, if you put it on and you didn't incorporate it, and you put it on the surface and you have snow melt, water runoff, you know, some of the storms we're having, it's just as big as a risk. So you've got to be thinking the exact same way. And then I think that this kind of incorporation, which is the most common tool in organic where they might be using, if they were tearing down a sod crop or a hay crop for corn the next spring, you know, to supply fertility. It's that sort of risk. If you wanted to put your manure on and incorporate it, if you had a lot of carbon-rich biomass, that would immobilize it. But if you put it on bare ground, your manure, and plowed it in, it would also, you'd have some real leaching loss. So that balance of timing is this challenge. You know, reality is there for organic farmers too. So if they want to do fall work, they could be putting stuff at risk if they don't have a lot of carbon to hold that nitrogen in place. So, you know, I think that's the balance of timing. And we can do things to let people actually see the combination of things. If they varied their cover crop type, for example, if you have a grass, its carbon to nitrogen ratio is going to differ, and it's not going to mineralize as rapidly, and it'll immobilize other soil nitrogen to a greater degree than a legume residue would do. So things like that, we can run a little model and show you what those trade-offs would look like in terms of time of release.
Okay, so Michelle, it popped into my head as you were talking about cover crops, that there will be a lot of producers who are not organic producers that are listening to this thinking, hey, wait a second, maybe I should go watch Michelle give this talk tomorrow because I wanted to use a cover crop. Is that worthwhile?
Yeah, and I actually think we have a lot of people who are interested in conservation management who are learning together and sharing information. You know, so there isn't a big wall between those groups, and I think we get a lot of people coming to organic conferences who are, you know, combining, you know, more varieties of technology, but definitely benefiting from a lot of the work that was maybe pushed up the noodle was pushed up the hill by the organic folks. But the cover crop folks who are managing are very ambitious at stewardship, are in the exact same suite of issues, identical.
Hey, so one last thing before we repeat when this is and where it is. A word that I don't think you used but popped into my mind as well. I'm wondering how much more often you use the word tilth or think about that than conventional folks do.
Yeah, that term is a wonderful term, and I think we have a lot of farmers, not just organic farmers, but definitely organic farmers, have a real focus on soil health. And that's kind of our current parlance of our times. But they would, I think very much of tilth. And something that I've really learned from our organic farmers and farmers who are what I think about precision conservation kind of guys or gals, really thinking about physical fertility that is connected very much to returning soil organic carbon from your residues, mostly because we aren't importing a lot of manures, seeing that benefit and really being aware that in Illinois, where we are having shifts in climate that create these periods of real water deficit in the summer and water excess in the springs and fall, where we really need physical fertility to move that water into rather than off the soil and then to hold the water in place. So they think about it, and I hope strive to manage it, and I hope we can give them more information so that they can document the good things that they're doing.
If you want to catch up with Michelle Wander, you can do that tomorrow at the Organics Conference at the Hilton Inn. Starts at 9 a.m. here in Champaign. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Drew Lerner is now with us from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Drew, we've been talking about Argentina for an awfully long time, but it's still in the news and worthwhile to discuss. What are conditions like today?
Well, the soil continues to be drying out through a big part of the country, and there is only a small portion in Cordoba and immediate neighboring areas that does have still adequate moisture in the subsoil. That area is probably going to be okay through this next week and a half of hot, dry weather. But the rest of the country is drying down, and we are going to continue drying down. There's going to be a little cool front that will move through parts of eastern Argentina this weekend, probably Sunday into Monday, and it'll bring in just a handful of showers, and but more importantly, it'll drop the temperatures about 5 or 6 degrees. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'll probably see extreme highs in the range of 100 to 106 with a couple of spots, maybe as high as 110. And then that front will go through on temperatures for the first part of next week will be in the 90s, maybe a couple of upper 80s. And that'll last for 2 or 3 days, and then they'll heat up again as we get close to the end of next week. And then a more important frontal system will come across the region as we go from the 11th out to about the 13th. And that should bring not only a chance for cooling, but it'll also bring a good chance for some showers and thunderstorms. Now, the rainfall that's advertised during that time period is still not going to be a fix-all, not by any means. We will see a quarter to three-quarters of an inch of rain, maybe coverage around 65%. Maybe even higher than that. I'm being very conservative with it at the moment. Some of the model data does suggest maybe some 1 to 2 inch amounts could occur, but I really want to wait until we get to the end of next week to see how good that might look. So for right now, we'll leave it as a partial bout of relief, and otherwise these crops are going to be in a lot of stress over the next 7 to 8 or 9 days, and further yield potential losses will take place.
Well, let's move north into the soybean growing areas of other countries, Paraguay, Brazil, Mato Grosso is someplace we probably ought to discuss too.
Absolutely. And really from Paraguay into the interior southern parts of Brazil, including Paraná and parts of southern Mato Grosso, to Sol and Sao Paulo, these areas have been wet for multiple weeks. The ground's been saturated. In fact, I think when we talked last week, we were talking about how wet it was. It is now drying down, and they will continue to dry down in that area for the next week to week and a half. And I think we will see a very big improvement in the environment for these early season beans to be maturing and to be harvested. So what looked like it was going to be a problem is going to be a lot better in that area. Now we go a little bit further to the north and east into parts of Mato Grosso and portions of Minas Gerais and Goiás. Those areas are going to get clobbered with a lot of rain. That's the only place in South America it's going to rain. It's going to rain rather hard there. And so we are looking at the potential for some flooding to take place, certainly some notable delays next week for harvest progress across some of that region and crop maturation. We're not completely mature there in some spots. Still, the risk of flooding is a rather big one right now.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
All right. Have a good week.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Tomorrow, I will be in Sherman, Illinois at the Farm Credit Illinois building for the Fielding Forward Crop Insurance discussion. Hope you can catch up with us then. And then in the afternoon, we'll record Commodity Week. Our panelists will include Dan Zwicker, Matt Bennett, Steve Freed, and Elaine Cubb. I'm Todd Gleason.